So if you have a clearly stated terms of service that has your refund policy and you do dispute it, then you will win. And we found that's really good. Like, winning chargebacks is actually good for your merchant reputation. Hey, everybody. This is Business Lunch, and you have your hosts here, Ryan Dice and myself, Roland Frazier, welcoming you to a seat at the table. Ryan, what's happening?
Nothing. It's great. It's kind of a chill week. I mean, I don't say nothing, but I'm excited that I've got an entire week where hopefully nothing eventful is taking place. Having said that now and putting that out to the universe, I'm sure that just crap's going to come crashing down. But dude, I looked out at this week and the number of just like open spots on my, it's how it should be.
Same for me.
We like to,
you're
screwed. But I'm feeling good. And so you asked me how I was going. I'm great. What about you?
No, I'm great too. It is. My week is, it's oddly open. Yeah. My wife has something she needs me to help her do for a couple of days. And then I've got a thing I need to do. And I looked at the calendar and I didn't have to move. I think I had to move one thing around. It's been so crazy that feels really good. Like, I was looking at this week saying,
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, because like my kids, there's like, it's the soccer, two of my kids play soccer, it's soccer playoffs, so there's like games every night, and they're starting early, and I'm telling my wife, I was like, you know, as busy as things have been, which is not okay. I think that's important, right? You know, CEOs, entrepreneurs, our goal should not be to optimize for busyness, and certainly shouldn't be something we brag about. But yeah, it's looking at it, it's like, oh, this is how it was before we had like 17 billion events that all stacked up together. This is like what normal actually is. So it's great. It's really, really good.
I have something that I read and I found it absolutely fascinating as a trend. I wanted to share with you and get your take on it. What do you think?
Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
So this is, I'm going to read the article. It's very, very, or whatever I clipped of it. It's very, very short. 42% of Gen Z admit to committing friendly fraud. Friendly fraud, also known as first party fraud, occurs when customers file a fraud claim or a chargeback despite being satisfied with a purchase. Any business that accepts digital payments as a target. Research revealed that 42% of Gen Z admit to engaging in first-party fraud. The majority of them don't realize what they're doing is fraud, and they're unaware that it's the merchant who absorbs the cost of the chargeback. I find that shockingly like tone deaf. They're not aware it's fraud. You literally are getting money back for something you paid for that you like. Anyway, I'm going to keep the conversation to just the article here. This article, blah, 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 tips and brands to protect. And it went on to talk about how you can protect yourself. I thought, my goodness, what? 42%? Holy goodness. And it's, to me, to call it friendly fraud puts such a happy face on, you know, cowardly card terrorism. You know,
it reminds me of quiet quitting. You remember when quiet quitting was a thing? Like, and it's like, oh, that's nice, they're quitting quietly. It's like, no, they're like, just, they stopped working. It was stealing,
paid, which is theft.
Go ahead. I think you're about to say the same thing as me.
I sound like the 1,000-year-old, you know, I used to walk both ways uphill to school in the snow guy, but my God, I mean, this, like, if we're, why are we putting all these euphemisms on these things that are so wrong and bad and calling it okay and making it this cuddly, it's quiet quitting and it's friendly fraud. It's hurting businesses and it is lying, cheating, and stealing. And what the heck? Okay. That's my 2 cents on it. What do you think? And what do you do about it?
Well, I think so. I mean, again, at the, I don't want this to just be, you know, two old guys like yelling at clouds kind of thing. And so from a business perspective, I do think that it's important that that your terms of service and stuff like that are up to date. We have had this happen, whether it was, you know, Gen Z or, you know, a old guy, Gen X or boomer like us.
I don't know.
It does happen, but we dispute them. And we've got somebody in our department where we can show, you know, our policy clearly states that if these things don't happen, then no refund. And we win them. So if you have a clearly stated terms of service that has your refund policy and you do dispute it, then you will win. And we found that's really good. Like, winning chargebacks is actually good for your merchant reputation. It shows that, you know, you are doing what you say you're doing, and you've got a professionalized team there that's willing to, you know, speak to these kind of things. So I think that's really, really important. You could probably speak to what needs to be in the terms of service better than I could with your, you know, with your legal background. I think a lot of this comes from, though, a lot of the direct-to-consumer, a lot of the D2C companies that received this massive amount of funding in 2019, 2020, 2021, when e-com was just the hottest thing on earth, because it was already big, and then COVID happened and it got even bigger. And so investors just plowed money into the e-com space. And every e-com company, anybody selling anything is like, yeah, send it back. Don't send it back. You ask for your money back. We'll give you a refund. Certainly digital products, nothing really to send back. They can just, you know, keep it and say they didn't like it. But a lot of this came from these really crazy money back guarantees that all these funded companies were doing because they were just buying customers at a loss. And now they can't do it anymore. But a lot of the policies still persist. A lot of the habits, consumer habits, are still persisting. And I think it's time for merchants to go, anybody selling anything, to go and review your terms of service and just say, do we really need to say that no matter what, under any circumstance, you can get your money back? You know, is that really what's the best thing? I don't know. What do you think? So
I think it's, I read it as being a little bit different than that, because I think it's wonderful to encourage people to shift the risk that things aren't what they thought they were and or fit the way they want with a very liberal return and exchange policy. But that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is a chargeback, which requires an act of contacting a credit card company and disputing a charge that you know that you made, and it's for a product or service that you know that you got and that you knew that you were satisfied with. And so yeah. I think that's a very important distinction to make. And where I come down on it is, rather than shaking a finger at the world and saying that's not how it should be, even though it isn't.
Kids these days.
Yeah. Is that, you know, damn credit card, you toting kids on TikToks. That really it's a problem that we have to address. And so while we wish that the world wasn't the way that the world is, sometimes it is what it is. And I definitely think that what you're talking about had something to do with it. And they're like, you know, well, I could return it to Amazon or Zappos, so I should be able to return it here. But what hopefully will happen is that someone will raise a flag and say, hey, when you get something that you buy and then you take the money back from the people that you bought it from, the people that work at that company all suffer. And that's really not a healthy thing for you to be doing in our economy. And you're also kind of a jerk for doing it. And so I think that it is good to bring awareness. And then we go to prevention. And what you said is absolutely the thing there, is that you have good contracts, you have solid policies for how you take and process customer orders. And hopefully you've got some sort of customer experience that extends beyond the purchase, so that you can have some form of relationship with these people that will cause them to understand that if there is a challenge they've got, then there is or isn't a return policy and process, and that's what they need to follow. Then if they disagree with that, they can charge back, but they can't charge it back and keep the stuff. And I mean, I think that's kind of all you can do. And so probably the most effective thing for us would be to say, what does that process look like? So let's assume that this does continue. One, I would say starting at the beginning would be, what is your return policy and is it clearly articulated? Because if it is clearly articulated, then what you want to try to do is encourage people to take advantage of the return policy as opposed to going and doing a chargeback, because the chargeback is going to impact your credit card merchant service significantly more adversely than just a return. Right.
And so have lots of extra fees associated with it in addition to the refund. That's a brutal thing about chargebacks. It's like, we're going to take the money and then take some more money for our trouble.
Yeah. And maybe put a reserve in place for you, and then you'll get even less money. Right.
Right.
Okay. So thing one is figure out what your return policy is, clearly articulate it, and communicate that to the customer along the touch points of the purchase process, particularly when it gets into their hands. What are you telling them when they get it? with respect to what they can do if they're not happy with it, and what their options are. I'd say that's probably thing one. What do you think thing two is?
I think thing two is to have a process in place for, you know, when chargebacks do occur. So you need to have the policies in place. You need to make people aware that they exist.
Anything else before we get there, though, that you could think of that maybe helps to mitigate?
There's no substitute for just having a truly exceptional, amazing product, a truly exceptional, amazing customer experience, for having a face to the product so that people don't feel like it's just some nameless, faceless organization. Because yeah. I mean, you said something before, people didn't realize this was a bad thing because they didn't know it would impact, you know, the company. Well, what does that mean? It means it's got to impact somebody. So they thought it was going to impact the credit card company.
I think so. Why? I think it's like, oh, the bank. It's the bank.
Sure. Yeah. So why do they do that? Because it's nameless and faceless. And so I think you got to make it clear. And one of the important things to do is just even asking for feedback, asking for a testimonial. Hey, you got this thing. How's it working? How can we help? So just really amazing, exceptional customer experience, letting them know that there are real live humans that are there behind, you know, at the company, actively pursuing them to make sure they get value. Well, that's just good business practice in general that we know will also prevent refunds and chargebacks.
Yeah, I like
but
that.
But yeah, okay. I don't know a ton of. I mean, and I do think I want to make sure we're talking about this. It's becoming more of a problem than maybe it had been in the past. But if your current chargeback rates are not bad, like if you're doing fine, this is not something that I think you should just panic about and you know, go and put down a bunch of, you know, you don't want to put a bunch of proverbial locks on the door to keep your customers out. Like, we don't want to, 0% chargeback rates, but our sales got cut in half. You know, like, at some point, you know, they in retail, they call it shrinkage, right? Which is basically just inventory leaving through the, you know, through the front door, or the back door, like without paying for it. Like, at some point, theft in all its forms, there's a cost of doing business.
Yeah.
So I think you want to do the best that you can, have the policies in place, do the best that you can from a customer experience and follow-up perspective, have the process in place for fighting it. But at some point, it just kind of is a cost of doing business.
Yeah. And we have experienced on more than one occasion employees coming to us and saying, everybody's charging back or everybody's doing this. And then you're like, everybody? You know, all of them? Like, we have zero sales. You know, it's like, how many? Yeah. Drill down into it and find out, is it, you know, well, no, I mean, it was two people.
There were two in the same week.
Yeah. Out of the 4,000 transactions we did this week. Okay. Well, it's probably okay. We want, you know, can we do things to make that better? But, you know, that's lower level priority. Okay. So, let's go into how do we improve our ability in the event that it does become a problem to be sure we get to keep money that we're entitled to. Very first thing, a clear policy that is on the page that states whatever your return or non-return policy is, what the terms, what the process is to do it. You need to be sure you're complying with all of the applicable laws of your state or country. And you need to have some proof that they did in fact do the thing, because a lot of those are, I don't recognize this. And I'll actually go so far as to help a little bit with the statement that I think there are plenty of people that buy things and then don't even realize that they bought them. And then they say, I don't recognize this charge, and keep them. So, like, I don't know. I'd love to look into that 42% and understand how it breaks down better. Yeah. But, you know, because all statistics, you know, they say 98% of statistics are made up on the spot. The challenge that potentially exists, because I know and you know, that we'll have people that opt in and give us their email address and we buy something from us. And then we deliver it to the email address. They paid for it. They ordered it. And it's a digital product and we send it to them and then they report us as spam. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's amazing. I think just the speed that life moves at for most people. And so, so part of that is, you know, like, get your charge product, email, all those processes to be congruent, that they are the same company. Don't have your, you know, WizBango 2000 product sold by Gemini Sports, and then the email comes from Mike, and then the, you know, the credit card is through a DBA, and it's like, that happens. So I think that congruence.
That credit card descriptor is a biggie, though. Like, yes. So what actually shows up on their statement is important. And right. I would make sure that it's whatever brand they're most going to recognize, ideally your website. Yeah. So if it is a website with the .com, if it'll fit, and there are character limits on there. But we used to try to get a website and a phone number in the credit card descriptor if we could. Can't for all, but at least if we get the website, we found that that is better than, you know, because we might have a company that's, you know, we had one, our holding company years ago, Idea Incubator LLC. And so God bless our finance department when they were setting up the merchant accounts. That was the business. And so that's what went on the credit card descriptor. Well, that is not the actual brand that we had. You know, the brand might have been Digital Marketer or one of the other ones. But we were getting a ton of chargebacks because people were looking at it going, I don't know what that is. And so I do think, like you said, having brand congruency from what's the website, what's the email, what's on the credit card descriptor, that's going to help, you know, decrease a lot of the, you know, oops fraud, like a lot of the, the honest people filing chargebacks because they truly don't know or remember what it is.
And that I would call friendly fraud. Like it's, I mean, fraud legally requires intent. So it's kind of not like, you know, friendly negligence, but it, you know, that's at least you don't feel, you know, you're like, okay, those aren't bad people, you know, then for the people who are taking advantage, I think then you go into what was my, you know, what is the process that's necessary for you to win a chargeback? I think that's really what you're going to reverse engineer. And so you've got their consent, you've got your terms of service. And then, you know, how did you take the card? Did you take it in the right way and everything? And now it's just basically, what proof do you have that they did in fact charge it? And ideally that it was shipped if it's a physical product and received if possible. And if not physical and digital, then that it was digitally delivered. And that hopefully you've got a log and you can see that they've accessed it. Because I know we fairly regularly have people doing chargebacks, but they've been accessing the heck out of every single thing that they bought. And you win those pretty much every time. So those are some things to think of. Anything else that you think we missed?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how for digital products, we show that they did in fact get it. Because people will say, I didn't even order this. It's like, well, is this your email address? Yeah, okay, well, we can show that this email address, you know, the login information was only sent to that email address. So it's not like the login information wasn't just freely visible on the thank you page. It had to be emailed in. Somebody then had to actively log into that email address and click the link to gain access, which we saw happened, you know, on this date. So that is essentially showing delivery for a digital product. And when we've been able to produce that, to your point, we've won every, you know, merchant dispute that we've, you know, that we've had. Now, we've got one person across about a half a dozen companies that's managing, you know, all of these different, you know, merchant disputes. And it's not that many. We don't do it so much for the savings that we get. I don't know, given that we get so few, that if that was the only thing this person did, I don't know that what we save in chargebacks would ROI what we pay this person. But one, she does other things. She's in the finance department, accounting department, so she's doing other things. But also, what it is helping is with that merchant reputation. And that's what we're most interested in protecting. So I think you got the policies, you understand, and I love what you said, asking your merchant provider, hey, what would you need to see in the event of this chargeback? Because the way we learned is we lost some chargebacks,
right?
Disputes
right.
that we know we should have won. They're like, well, we need to see this and this. Like, well, crap, let's go put that stuff in.
Fix it.
We used to, we used to, for example, immediately give people access. We would auto log them in. As soon as they bought, we would automatically log them in to the members area, which seemed like a really great customer experience. And arguably it is, but you know, now there's no way for them to say it. So now it's not, you got to click on it. You got to go log in.
Yep.
So that's definitely the lessons will come as this stuff happens. Don't panic about it. I would like to make one other comment though, before we break on just what I've seen out there on, again, angry guy yelling at clouds in the TikToks, but I am shocked at how much fraud is being taught to Gen Xers, millennials, and anybody who's there to watch on TikTok. Like, my guess is that there's somebody out there, the reason that 42% of Gen Z's admitted doing that, I haven't found this, but I'd be willing to bet that there is a TikTok video or 10,000 of them of somebody saying, hey, want to see a cool chick for a cool trick for how to save money on all your purchases? It's really simple. What I do here is I buy it and then I go in and I do a chargeback. And the reason I believe that to be true Have you seen the TikTok video of the woman basically sharing her cool trick for getting a loan with no credit that's essentially money laundering?
No.
Dude, this is hilarious. And I say this because, one, it's a funny story, but two, you need to know that this is the kind of information that's being spread out there and is being taught to your consumers. And if you're a parent, your kids. So this woman, she's an Airbnb, you know, flipper person. And so she's like, here's how I get, you know, free stuff to go and buy more Airbnb. Step number one, I set up an LLC. And when I have an LLC, then I can go and I can get a QuickBooks account. And then when I have a QuickBooks account, I send myself an invoice for $5,000 for services to this other company. And then I pay that back. And now I've shown income. And now I can, based on this income, look what pops up. QuickBooks immediately offers me a loan. So I get this loan and then I get this credit card and it's this whole thing. And dude, the entire thing is just money laundering and fraud. And it's all over the place, visible. So part of the reason that people don't know what they're doing is wrong is because they got influencers openly telling them what to do with a smile on their face and, you know, quick cuts and stuff like that.
This is my favorite one. I think we're going to pull it up my son Ryan just showed me. It is Infinite Money Hack or Infinite Money Glitch. You're going to love it. Do we have it handy? Okay.
Is it the one? I think that's the one I described. Maybe not.
No. This is you'll love it. I'll talk about it, and then if we can find it, we'll put it on.
And just so we're clear, is it real? It's not a joke. It's not somebody making.
No, it's real advice. Real advice. So this guy is basically a painter, and so his infinite money hack is basically that he paints something. He goes and gets an appraisal. There we have it.
This is a clip of someone else's thing.
So this is a clip of somebody else's thing of it. Let's roll that.
Does this work?
Yep.
So
basically that's fraud also. Yeah. I'm going to paint something. I'm going to get an appraisal on it. If the appraisal is going to say it's $60,000, then I'm going to get insurance to cover the appraised amount. So I guess we have a fraudulent appraiser in there too, by the way. Then the insurance company is going to, I guess, take that at face value, which that makes sense if they could see something and say, yeah, okay. Because they'll worry about it if you make a claim only. And then you're going to take that to the bank, who apparently is going to loan him 100% of the value of the asset, which we know is a lie. But let's say it was 50% and he got $30,000, which might happen in some world. That's fraud, flat out.
Yeah. The only thing I think that advice has going for it is I think the guy is just totally full of crap. Like, there's just no way that happened. Like, It's one of those things that sounds like it should work, but for his sake, I hope he's full of crap, because if he's doing it, it's fraud. And technically just lying to a bunch of people isn't as illegal as doing what he actually suggested.
And he's teaching it. That's the thing.
Yeah, it's like module 2 in his, like, you know, painter riches course or some crap like that. I don't know that to be true, but it's on brand.
Art appraisal riches. Yeah, I like it. Anyway. Yeah, okay. We're going to play the rest of it now. it's kind of a hack. I like infinite money glitch, and it's kind of a hack way of selling your paintings to have them foreclosed on. And I guess then you just find another bank because no banks talk to each other, and your credit will be just fine, right? Because they're not going to have a personal guarantee on that loan. Anyway, it was to me very very interesting. But hopefully, guys, this was helpful in teaching you about friendly fraud, that there are people that are out there that believe it's okay to do these things, that your communications should ideally, in your brand congruency, help the accidental, not ill-intentioned bad doers, not accidentally commit what I would call as more of friendly negligence, but we'll go with friendly fraud because it alliterates. And then last but not least, for those people who are just scumbags that are trying to steal from you and get your stuff, have all of the documentation, reverse engineer, what does it take to win a chargeback in your field for your company, ask your merchant provider, put those into your policies and procedures, and then you're probably going to be just fine. So along with Ryan's caution of don't overreact and make things so difficult that you lose business from people that are good people that are going to buy from you just because you're trying to stop the one person out of 10,000 that's doing the bad thing. So that's it. If you like this, please share, and we will see you next time on Business Lunch. Hey, Roland Frazier here. If you're looking for a way to grow your business exponentially, to get more customers and ultimately increase your wealth, there's no faster way to do it than to acquire other businesses that already have the customers, products, services, teams, and media that you want. If you want to double your sales, just acquire a company that has the same sales as yours. It sounds simple, but far too many people end up starting new businesses that fail and forget that they could skip all the hard stuff and just acquire one that already exists. There's a reason why private equity firms, family offices, big companies like Apple, Google, and some of the smartest entrepreneurs on the planet do not start new businesses from scratch. They acquire already successful businesses. And when they do it, they instantly increase their sales, their profits. If they want market share, they increase that. They can get new products and services to offer all instantly. Hey, look, 90% of new businesses fail. 90%. Why not acquire an already successful business and increase your chances of success by 900%? What most people don't realize is you can acquire highly profitable businesses with no money out of your own pocket in pretty much any country in the world, regardless of your credit, and without having to go find a bunch of investors or needing any experience. Look, I've been acquiring businesses for over 30 years now, and I cover the whole process in my Epic Investing Strategy Training, and I want to give it to you 100% free. Just visit businesslunchpodcast.com/epic to get your free access to my Epic Investing Training right now while it's available.